This is Patrick Gleason, and you've reached a higher level of Nerdvana. These are...
It's game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay. Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh. End of line.
Hey, we still exist. We are back.
Been a while.
I do believe this, however, is the very first episode that we are sans a host. Or sans the regular host.
Sans Nathan, unfortunately.
Yeah, sans Nathan. He is. He and Noah are working stiff tonight, and Jeremy and I wanted to get an episode out.
Yes.
So this is going to be rather freeform, rather interesting in that way. But we are sitting in our deep and dark, now dusty lair, as it has been,
several months since
we were able to actually play anything. I think the Wizards College last weekend was the first game I got to play in over 2 months. Aside from the occasional board game or card game here or there, but I could pretty much count on one hand the amount of gaming I've had in the amount of gaming I've been able to do in the last 3 months. It is after Christmas. It is the glorious Friday, January 10th, and Jeremy and I are here hanging out. And Jeremy's showing off some of his Christmas swag because I haven't had a chance to see it yet, and he's got in his cheesy little mitts the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, or just Dungeons and Dragons.
Rules Encyclopedia, a book that I owned as a child and used. We used this book so much that it disintegrated. The binding disintegrated, and my wife heard me whine and complain about wanting this back again, and she found the only one that we could afford because these suckers go for, you know, $90 and $100. And she got the last one that was reasonably priced, I guess.
That was not ridiculous.
Yes. They are, I own a PDF. I did buy a PDF, at one point a long time ago. At least that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Yes. I did buy the PDF.
Yeah, it looks like on Amazon, it starts at $70.
Yes. And that's because it's just a great, great book. I forgot the other book I got, and that's Primal Order, but I'll discuss that later. Because Rulecyclopedia is, for those of you who don't know, Dungeons & Dragons back in the day, and it's all the rules from the box set series, including Basic, Expert, Companion, and Masters. And basically, you can take characters from level 1 through 36, and really, you can go beyond that. This was the basic game. Mm-hmm. Though, when you say basic, that's really not giving enough credit. This game really had rules that could expand on your game. This had mass combat rules, expansions for optional skills. The combat system for fighters was expanded upon. Even in the back, it has rules for changing over to second edition AD&D if you really wanted to, which is kind of funny. It even skips your first edition and goes directly to second edition. One thing I love about it, though, is...
I love it, like, it has big full-page hex maps.
Exactly.
There.
It has the known world, as it was called, and the hollow world in the back of the book. That was one of my favorite things.
The real, like, full bleed. I mean, these are like
these are
page
the
edge
real
to page
things.
Edge. That's nice.
It starts with the gray scale of the main known world.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you turn the page, because it also describes the different places, I do think there is kind of funny, the ripoff of from good old The Hobbit, the Five Shires, but that's fine. That happens. But then it goes into a color hex of the different, like the principalities of Glantry, the Kingdom of Alfheim, the Republic of Darrakhan, just so many different places. And I remember playing in some of these places. Fort Doom, we attacked in Fort Doom so many times. And then you have the whole world of Mystara just at your fingertips. The whole world is they give you the scale, the circumference. They've given you the whole globe, and it's all in color. Even the stars out.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you turn the page, it gives you the hollow world. This is the world within the world. Because they had adventures for the hollow world. The hollow world was interesting. And again, turn the page, more hexes for the actual different world. Rockholm. This is how...
I mean, it's in hexes, essentially, you could figure out really exact travel times.
Exactly, travel times. Yeah. And it was so interesting because it broke it down. You could actually... It gives you the description,
This is crunchy gamer goodness here,
yes,
is what I'm seeing.
And the thing is, though...
Like, I wish they'd do this for other games.
It's so simple, though. It's crunchy, but it's simple.
They should do it now.
Yeah, they really should. This was worth the money you spent back in the day.
I mean, when was this put out? Was it early 90s?
Oh, God. Let's see. This one, at the time, was $24.95.
$24.95.
Yeah.
It's probably a publishing thing in the front. I mean, it's in great shape. It's a beautiful book. But it's all of this stuff. It's 1991.
Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, obviously you could have the basic and all that, mm-hmm. but this has everything in it. I just love that. It gives you all the monsters that you need. The basic monsters are in here from dragons to, you know, like blast spores, boars, you know, so you have your monsters, you can run that, but it also has strongholds and domains. The rules for running strongholds in here are really neat. They're not that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You could run a whole domain system in this.
Okay, now is this like sort of similar to Birthright?
Birthright
type of thing,
is
like how do you mean running stronghold and domains?
Well, you're running it like it runs in the sense of you are in charge, because basically at some point they expect your character to build a domain, build a kingdom, and so they decide, well, here's rules for using it. You know, a piece of land that is owned and ruled is called a dominion,
mm-hmm.
or a domain. And basically, you know, it's a text, you draw it out, and then it gives you rules. And, you know, you have your peasant families, it's using percentile dice, it's using all the charts. It breaks it down on what's going on.
I should point out that for our... for listeners who like, oh, this book sounds awesome and don't want to shell out $70 for it, you can get a PDF of it off of RPG Now for $10.
Right, which I did purchase a PDF.
Sure.
So, it also has actual rules for things like crafting relics, using relics back in the day. It has dungeon master procedures, things for like secret doors, adventure time uses, when to use dice, overusing dice, sleep and unconsciousness. I mean, it's just filled with stuff. And at the same time, at the beginning of the book, it gives you how to build a character. What is a character? How to role play? Roll for hit points. What is strength? Just like in a player's handbook. And it gives you classes, like for the cleric, a class from 1 to level 36. It is giving you everything you need to run a game. You can run a full game with just this book. All the classes in here are your basic classes. This is back in the day when you had dwarves and elves as a class. halfling as a class.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Which is fine, because it was...
Do they still have alignment languages?
Is it past that? Don't know if they... I think they do, but, you know, we never really played with that. We're just like, whatever. Mystic is an optional class.
Well...
It talks about your cleric spells, how to cast spells. You know, then it gives you the spells.
This kind of reminds me, for those who don't know, back in June, my wife and I ended up more or less adopting my wife's younger sister, Rowan, and she's 16 years old. She lives with us now. She's been going to an anime club at the public library every week. She's joined up with a group in there that has now started playing D&D. So she's played her first game of D&D outside of, you know, with us or at CampCon or anything like that last week. And had such a good time. They're actually all coming over here because there's no club meeting this next Thursday. Mm-hmm. They're coming here to play their game next week. I don't know what system they're using. She's like spreading off something sort of like with mana points and stuff. I'm wondering if it's like Hackmaster or something. But, you know, the system itself is irrelevant, but it's kind of fun to watch because she's getting all excited because she's a level one elf sorceress. And I'm like, that's awesome. And all talking about it's a kick down the door.
It is.
You know,
the thing.
But we've all been there. We've all played those games. It's a lot of fun. It's fun to see it. In a new young player
They give you the notes for like the weapons. Like weapons don't just do boring stuff. They actually have special stuff. Mm-hmm. Like there's a blackjack for knocking the crap out of people. It then gets into like the equipment, the armor. I love the picture of the armor. Now, look at the picture of the woman. She's not some. Yes.
Whoa, she's not in a chainmail bikini.
No, she's sexy. But notice how. The armor is not really... It's not built for her.
Uh-huh.
It's built to protect her.
Uh-huh.
But she's still sexy. Because she's standing like that. But it's actual armor. Whoa! What a concept. Now, this was back in the day when armor went from... You know, it went down. And this does have FACO. It has FACO charts like crazy. Barding vessels, meaning boats... River boats, the prices, the capacity, how far they move, you know, why siege equipment, battering rams, miscellaneous siege, training, weapon choices. You can actually have up to your mastery and weaponry from unskilled, basic, skilled, expert, master, and grandmaster. What does that do? Well, it does all sorts of stuff. You can make a character who can just do nasty things with weapons. And this is all basic and, mm-hmm. you know, extra rules like that. You can cause like a character with a certain weapon specialization to actually cause another character or an enemy to despair because you're just so good with your weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, and just look at the charts. You go to the charts. And it looks like some sort of mathematical equations.
Mm-hmm.
This is for all of like the special weapons and what do they do and it's just craziness, but it's awesome. And once you learn to read them, you're like, oh my god, my character can deflect weapons. My character does like plus 10 weapon damage. You know, it's just you could do so many cool things from mm-hmm. such a basic game. And it just goes on and on like that. So for $10 as a PDF, that's totally worth it. I don't expect anyone to go out and buy this particular one as a hardcover. I just wanted this for the longest time.
It's a piece of your childhood.
It's a piece of my childhood. The artwork is simple but great. But as a PDF, I mean, I may take some of this and put it in 5th edition. I haven't decided.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just great.
And speaking of which, I think since the last time we talked, they announced their 5th ed is coming
fifth
out.
5th ed is coming
this,
out.
Well, this year now.
This year. It is coming out this year. They don't have an exact date, but this I think they said spring or summer. We will see if they keep to that.
The last time I played any iteration of it was that one time where I played over Skype with you.
Right.
So, I mean, that was over a year ago now.
And probably 2 years. Still want to throw something together, but work obviously just is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
We still need to do that because 5th edition is kind of...
And I'm sure it's... Since I played that playtest, I'm sure it's way different now.
It's kind of turning into, if things work out, I kind of see it as a streamlined 2nd edition with some 3rd edition stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be something that you would easily convert to different things. Like, I know when I'm running it, I can take monsters from my AD&D books and very easily put them in there. But I can also take 3rd edition monsters, and without too much trouble, I can use them too. And I have heard from some people on the forums that they can modify some of the 4th edition critters and use them.
Sure.
But the thing I like better is using some of the 4th edition monster powers with some of the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
They still need to work on the monsters that they put in 5th edition, because while they have some neat abilities, some of the monsters are really pretty weak.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember back in the day when they did, when 3rd Ed came out, they had a conversion manual you could download that was to convert your AD&D character into 3rd Ed.
Well,
I vaguely remember
this
that.
Is more of the on-the-fly thing I've noticed.
Sure.
Like, I can pick up my AD&D monster manuals.
Sure.
And just grab monsters out of it.
Sure. Well, you have more experience with this, the new 5th Ed, which, are they still calling it D&D Next?
They don't have a name yet, and you hear more and more, like, this 5e. That's what 5e, seems to be what people are calling it. And I don't know if that's going to be the general... like language for it, because D&D Next just sounds really bad.
Yeah, it sounds kind of pretentious.
It does sound pretentious, and I just—it
sounds like Pepsi.
It does
Crystal
sound
Pepsi.
Like Crystal Pepsi.
This is the Crystal Pepsi of D&D.
I hope they come up with a better name, but I think it's finally
how it's sort of shaping up as 4th edition is the new Coke of D&D.
Yeah.
Now we're going back to D&D.
And I hate that it kind of makes it look like 4th edition is, I mean, dead, but really, if you think about it, nowadays, no edition is dead.
Yeah, I mean, we've mentioned that 1,000 times
right.
on the show, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, we're saying, Rule Cyclopedia, you can go buy that right now, legally, on RPG Now, and have it for $10 and be done, and play with that.
And speaking of which,
I was up at Tabletop, and they have the wooden limited edition box set of the original D&D books.
Yes, they do.
You know, the reprints of all that stuff. But this is like original D&D. I mean, this stuff is actively out
you
there.
Can
you can
get
go
it.
Purchase it.
Legally. And that's what a lot of companies that went crazy, Watsy, didn't realize.
Yeah, it's what the music industry eventually figured out with iTunes and stuff. It's like, okay, we're spending too much money fighting this. We can, by putting it out there, people will buy it, and two, the people it's the constant thing with piracy and software piracy. It's a big question of the people who are pirating it, would they actually buy it?
Mm-hmm.
And there are some people who, you know, and I'm with this camp of, well, if there's no other option of getting it, then we have to do it this way. But if you put it out, there are people who say, well, if you put it out in a legal format that I can get in the PDF format through RPG Now, or buying it in a really nice, cool reprint. Because, I mean, we're gamers. We love those cool editions saying, hey, I've got my D&D books I played when I was a kid, and they're really cool looking now. And, you know, I know people are like, well, I don't want to have the crappy scanned PDF that I found off of BitTorrent. I want this version.
I want the actual PDF version that the company put in there. And, for example, Paizo, because I was looking at the Pathfinder Ultimate Campaign Guide, which is a nice book.
Is that out?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay.
Now,
I didn't know it was out yet.
I recommend getting the PDF. The book is expensive as hell. But if you go to their site, something you'll notice, you can purchase both the book and the PDF, and together that is cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
Paizo's been really good about that.
I just bought the PDF.
Mm-hmm.
PDF's beautiful.
Well, for the longest time, I think they still do it. The Pathfinder core book is only $10 as a PDF.
Yeah, and this was only $10 as a PDF too. Like, most of their books are only $10 for PDF, and it's the same book. And I was just started reading through it, and that Ultimate Campaign Guide is awesome. It has another domain building stuff in it. That was the part that I really wanted. I'm going to look at the other stuff too. It's nice. And it's a nice book. Pathfinder stuff, while I don't want to play specifically or run like a third edition Pathfinder, I want to steal stuff from Pathfinder and put it into other games because they've done a good job. So I do see PDFs of Pathfinder that I want to buy. And that's one that I picked up. So I definitely, at some point when you can, I would pick it up because it has some good ideas.
For it's still that way. You can get the core PDF 50 and the PDF, or the core book is 50 and the PDF is 10. You're saying it's the ultimate
campaign guide, I think it's called.
Ultimate Pathfinder Ultimate Campaign.
I think that's what it's called. It's the one that talks about.
It's only $40.
Yeah, but
they've been putting out a lot of nice stuff. Actually, I mean,
oh yeah, it's a beautiful.
Did you see
book.
Their Beastiary box set is really nice. If you're not using miniatures and stuff, you can just in the Beastiary two, $40. You get a nice, you know, thick cardboard stand-up representation of every monster in the Beastiary.
I was tempted to.
I mean, even if you don't play Pathfinder, you play D&D,
right?
You can use that.
Another oldie but goodie. If you do anything with deities in your games, yes, I do actually enjoy one of the old school deities and demigods, and I do somewhat enjoy the 3.5 deities and demigods. But if you want something that's really neat, Primal Order, that's old school. Mm-hmm. That's back when TSR was trying to build a system that they could put on top of other systems.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to have Primal Order.
Was this one that never got published?
It got published. The other ones didn't.
Okay.
Primal Order.
I think you should.
And then
at some point.
Yes, because I have a PDF of that one that I got. Primal Order plus there are a bunch of other ones that were part of that one. They were going to do like Divine Order, Martial Order, and stuff like that.
That's
and then
right.
They got sued.
That's right. I remember. Yeah, I remember
but
you showing me that.
I now have an original copy of Primal Order. I don't remember if it's a 1990 or 1989 or something like that. But it talks about if you want deities, and remember, in a D&D-esque game, some people like to have their deities have limits. We're not talking about hit points necessarily. We're just talking about limits. So it introduces certain things you can do with deities. And it's a neat book.
Oh, yeah, you did show me this.
It's a neat
book.
You
have the physical
copy. I have the physical copy.
Nice.
And I did purchase a while back their one on servants and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I like about it is it's different. Would I use it as is? No. But I would definitely take it, and I would use it with, like, deities and demigods and some of my own ideas. And I would combine those because I like deities, but I also like to give deities certain, you know, their own thing. You know, I like to give them certain limitations. They're still beyond mortals, but they have certain limitations. I think it, at least for me, makes them neat. So it's an interesting read also, and it also kind of gives you an idea of what TSR was kind of thinking back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually has rules for changing over to lots of different gaming systems.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, listed on the back are Ardru and Grimoire, Ars Magica, Castle Falkenstein, Chivalry and Sorcery, Core, Earthdawn, GURPS, Harnmaster, Hero System, Cult, Pendragon, Rollmaster, RuneQuest, Shadowrun, Talos Lanta, Torg, Tri-Tac Games, Warhammer FRP,
right.
World of Darkness, and World of Cinnabar. I guess Warhammer. Games Workshop is very litigious. I'm sure they weren't very happy about that.
They aren't the ones who sued them, though.
Who sued them?
I believe it was Palladium was one of them that sued him. And then there was somebody else that sued him also. Because back in that point, remember, this was old school. This was way back. And that particular book was the version that doesn't have the AD&D rules on it. Because there's two versions of the book. And the book is now...
Yeah, Kevin Cimbieta, owner of Palladium Books, sued for copyright infringement.
Right.
And they settled out of court.
And then they decided not to do their other ones. Because the system was supposed to go on top of other systems, which is kind of a neat idea. Because their system is kind of a percentile system. But I like the concepts. And I wish they would have been able to do like a martial order.
Yeah, they wanted to do the military order, the economic order, the governmental order, and the underworld order.
And they have great ideas.
Yeah.
But sadly, they got sued and they had to stop.
Yeah. Well, that's why Palladium sucks.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Still haven't received... We're 100 and some episodes into this, and I have not received a death threat for my bashing of Palladium.
Well, it just proves, you know. So, those kinda, are
I'm kind of disappointed, guys. Really. Right. Yeah, just say it.
Yeah. But those are fun. And those can be used and modified, and you can do some neat things. You can also run a very fun and controlled god game with the deities and demigods, primal order combined, and it would not be something where you're just like, I can do anything I want. No. It would be a game that you can control. And it would be kind of amusing too. It would be different. It would be different. And I looked at it, I'm like, you could actually do this. You could actually do this, and it wouldn't be something where you just run around and do everything you want. Because the rules are such that if some mortal comes up to you, you're just like, and just splat.
Yeah.
But there's critters out there that are just like powerful enough or whatever, cosmic creature, you know. But anyway, their ideas are neat. And they also make sure at the beginning to say, look, we're not trying to make fun of anybody's religion. We're not, that's not the point.
Yeah.
But here are some cool ideas. They talk about churches, you know, they talk about all sorts of cool stuff. So I recommend that one just for its own amusement, even if you don't do any deities in your game world, or you just say they're all power, whatever, don't care.
Sure.
Check it out. I mean, it's on RPG Now.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. You can get the PDF, and it's not expensive at all.
It's probably the revised edition that they removed the stuff.
Yeah.
I saw that there were two editions of
There's two editions. One of them has the AD&D rules for changing over. It's not actually difficult to figure out.
And it's $10 on $10. Nice.
It is a neat book. It's old school. Mm-hmm. And the art is interesting.
No, yeah. And we're talking, it was like 94 is when it was published.
Right.
So
right.
I mean, this is right when TSR was bought out by WotC. This was right when Magic just exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And oh god, did it explode?
Because the other version was right before that too.
Yeah.
So, but you can also, when you look at deities and demigods, the third 3.5 version, you can see some of the aspects of this book in deities and demigods, just kind of how it was built. So.
Right. They talk about the third ed demigods? That was a good book.
It is. It's a good book. I mean, it's one of those things that, see, this talks about primal, which is basically the energy of the gods. And while instead of hit points, you have what's called primal base.
Mm-hmm.
And really, mortals can't do anything about primal base, but other gods can and things like that.
Yeah.
In deities and demigods, they did use hit points, but they also made it really damn hard to kill gods.
Mm-hmm.
I would just say mix the two, because you can do some cool stuff. Though if you look at the salient powers, in some ways the deities and demigod gods were a little bit more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But with the primal stuff added on, well, at that point you just created awesome critters.
Yeah.
So, But they're fun books. Both in it, the Old Deities and Demigods was a cool book. They were cool books too, because they had the other religions in there. Like, the oldest one had Cthulhu.
Mm-hmm.
But then they had, you know, the Indian, you know,
yeah,
Native American.
Yeah, the original Deities and Demigods with squids. Yes. That's an infamous one. You know, it's the...
It is.
I mean, if you have that book, there are several different editions
mm-hmm.
of it. The Elric gods.
Yes, Elric
like
gods.
They got in trouble. They had to remove the Elric stuff, the Cthulhu stuff, and I want to say something else, but...
Which, the Elric ones, I have that, and that's awesome.
Uh-huh.
The Elric ones are
so they published it, and they reprinted it with... they had to take one set out, mm-hmm. and they got sued again. They had to take the other set out. It's something about... Or they published it, and they had to give credit. And then
something.
It's a long... If you ever get into collecting D&D books, it's one of those notorious ones.
It's one where you like will have to own three of them if you really want all
yeah.
of them. Something. I think
at least three of them. Yeah.
I have the one with the Eldric ones, but I don't have the Cthulhu ones. So... Mm-hmm. I've seen the Cthulhu ones because I think maybe James had it or something. Somebody had it.
Yeah, he did.
So, which is sweet. I mean,
remember because he bought it at Gen Con when he went with us.
Hey, I mean, that's cool. Yeah. But I mean, it is cool. And it also adds to the history of a company.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the company prints something, they're like, oh, whoops, we probably should have gotten permission to do that. Though, with Cthulhu, I would think that would have been. Fine, because
at the time it was not public domain. It's public domain now.
Oh, so now
I mean, it only became public domain 10 years ago, maybe.
If that. Yeah.
So
that was something about like Sherlock Holmes. They were talking
about six, seven.
You can discuss everything but the last eight.
Yeah.
Books of Sherlock
it's
Holmes.
75 years after the death of the author, and I want to say. I think Lovecraft died in 38, so or 28.
Okay. So
I don't remember, but
that's why there's
like
so much
I just remember stuff like now. Just a few. That's why yeah, Cthulhu just suddenly is everywhere because they don't pay a licensing fee now. They can't tie it into the Call of Cthulhu system or anything without special licensing from Chaosium, all that. But yeah, that's why you get Cthulhu Conan is public domain. That's why you get you know Conan Munchkin and Conan whatever. Things like that. Like, you know, you could do the same with, I don't know, I don't remember when Rudyard Kipling, Edgar Rice Burroughs died for, John Carter Mars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, I know Cthulhu is public domain now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they can definitely use that stuff.
I think that's a good thing, though, at least for the Cthulhu, because it opens up so many things. And while I want artists to get all the money that they deserve,
mm-hmm.
there are some things that really should be public domain because get expanded upon. And they were talking about fan fiction. And they were talking about how some authors love fan fiction and other authors hate fan fiction. Where I guess they said like Anne Rice hates it
because
mm-hmm. she has her vampires and this is the way they're supposed to be. But then, like, other authors are like, hey, fanfic all you want, because that's cool. It expands my work. It expands, you know, the ideas and so on. So I think it's great with the Call of Cthulhu.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Cthulhu, it's I want to point out this new game that came out called... I think iterations of it had been coming out from Modifus, this game studio called Achtung. It's Call of Cthulhu during World War II.
Nice.
And it's a Savage Worlds edition thing. So I mean, it's you have this. It's actually a really cool looking sort of pulpish. You know what? I'm surprised no one has thought of this yet. Type of hey, let's do Cthulhu during World War II. There are several books out for it already, but I think the reason I mention it is you can get a section of the core book, the PDQ core rule book, Octo Cthulhu Three Kings is $7.50 right now. the Savage Worlds one, you get bundles. It's really cool looking. I just wanted to mention that because it looks really neat. It's got that great pulp feel. As we were just talking about Cthulhu Tech.
Yes.
Upstairs.
We were.
I love Nathan, but Nathan sort of got it in his head for some reason that I hate Call of Cthulhu, which I clearly don't. And that got us off because, Jeremy, you've never been a huge fan of Call of Cthulhu, at least the game.
The game. I just don't like
the hopelessness.
It's not even the hopelessness itself. It's the
fragility?
Yes.
I am really squishy.
I'm sorry. This is the thing that would happen at some point.
Yeah.
There would be some individual who goes, screw this.
Yeah.
I am going to kill these things.
Let me go grab this one. But yeah, Cthulhu Tech.
Yes, Cthulhu Tech. Cthulhu Tech.
Cthulhu Tech.
Yes. And my point is, at some point, if someone finds out, there is going to be someone who, with some sort of weapon, is going to try to kill it and is going to survive. It just statistically, someone is going to do that. And statistically, they're not going to go nuts.
Yes.
So that's my problem with the game. And people may hate me for this. I understand the game's about insanity and it's about madness. But for me, I just can't. I don't know why. But Cthulhu Tech, that idea, I like. Where humanity has reached that point where they can just blow the living crap out of them. Yes, there's casualties. Yes, we may not win the whole time. But boy, are we going to kill a lot of them. We're going to cause as much destruction as possible because we have the weaponry at that point. Now, obviously, if you get into some of the mythos, some of these entities are just, you can't. There's not, but these are not the entities that, for the most part, hunt humans.
Mm-hmm. Well, essentially, it's set in 2085. And it's what it sounds like. It's BattleTech and Call of Cthulhu, sort of. I mean, you have 30-foot tall war machines, you know, that you crawl inside and then you go lay the smack down on someone from the Esoteric Order of Dagon. It's really fascinating. It sounds cool. I would like to try it out at some point. I've had a copy of it for a while. I know you would like to try it just because it sounds like, you know,
kill.
Hi, I'm Cthulhu. I will get into your dreams. I will blast you with an auto cannon. Suck it.
It's probably one of those things that
plasma star spawn.
Exactly. Before the human soldiers go out into battle, the psychiatrists already make them insane, so that way it doesn't matter. It's just, at some point, humanity, that's what humans do, they adapt.
Mm-hmm.
We either adapt or die. And if we die, well, there's no story. So we adapt. And we hate. And if something's trying to kill us, we hate as a group.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds pretty awesome, actually.
So, I don't know, what system is it, do you know?
It's its own thing. It's its own system, I believe.
That's fine. We can look it up later.
It's a self-contained storytelling game, is what it says. It's a D10 base system. So it's not percentile. It says you need 5 D10s to play.
Huh.
And so it's not something that you can rush out and just use your basic role playing system, BRP system on.
Though I guess you could. You could just tell a story about mechs blowing up Cthulhu void monsters.
Oh, yeah.
And that's perfectly fine, too. So I guess I like my Cthulhu. I mean, I like it more in the D&D aspect where it's still horrifying. It can drive you insane. But at the same time, there are ways to fight it.
Right.
but maybe for a one shot, I could probably handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that there's really good stories out there written. Well, I've read the story, but I mean, there's really good, actual games, you know, written, you know, modules.
And you can actually get quick start rules for Cthulhu Tech for free.
That's pretty awesome.
Off of RPG Now. So, I mean, if you want to just get an idea of it and test it out, it is on there, which is really cool. Just saying.
It's nice. That's nice.
I really like it when companies do that, like a little quick start or just sort of a sampling is great. It makes me wish that what was the widescreen game? The one that you and I hate because it doesn't fit on the bookshelf correctly.
What is it called? The widescreen game, that's what it's called.
Yes.
I wish I had quick start. There's two things I wish. I wish that all companies that you buy stuff with wish would do the round up for charities.
Mm-hmm.
Number one.
Yeah.
And number two, quick start rules. Free quick start rules for all games.
There are gamers for cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately. Christmas wise, I didn't get any gaming stuff. I didn't get any table. I didn't get any card games, board games, role playing stuff. I sort of reached an interesting plateau when it comes to gaming stuff, so I don't buy it unless I'm going to play it rather immediately.
That's fair.
I haven't been to tabletop in a long time just because I've been, you know, broke and we had a baby. But there are games that I'm like, hey, that looks really cool, but then I sort of sit down and realize if I buy it, I'm not going to play it anytime soon, so I'm not going to buy it. And there are a lot of games that are like that for me, too. One of which is Numenera, which you got.
I did get Numenera, and I don't know if I'm going to be playing it anytime soon.
It looks cool. It looks gorgeous. It's a Monte Cook's thing, isn't it?
It is. And I actually, I asked my family for two books.
Mm-hmm.
I asked for either this book or 13 Age, which is
out now, right?
It is. And I've got it on order over at Tabletop because I really want that one. But the thing is, this is the one I got. So, and I just started reading it, so I can't tell you everything about it. I can just tell you that when I have started reading it, I feel more sci-fi-ish than fantasy. I know it takes place far, 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 far in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that the magic is technology. I mean, there's even individuals in here that say it's technology.
Mm-hmm.
The common individuals believe it's magic. But it's technology. And that's fine. I have nothing against that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is very cool so far. The story that the book starts off with is very neat. The story is, I'm not going to go into the story. I'm just going to tell you what it's called. It's the Amber Monolith. And it's actually a religious story about the High Father Calval, who's the Amber Pope. And they're a group who is basically about the Order of Truth. I guess they're like a religious organization who is into technology, getting the technology back. But it seems very neat. I mean, your brother seems to like it. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at the DMing portion of it to know how to play it. But one of the things that they even talk about, Ninth World, that's what they call the world, is a science fantasy setting approximately a billion years in the future. People of the world dwell amidst the flotsam of impossible ultra tech of 8 prior civilizations and call it magic. So, I mean, in a billion years, well, yeah. But even though they still call it, you know, science fantasy, I'm still getting more of a science fiction feel from it, which, again, is fine. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty. My God, it's pretty.
Yeah, it looks like a gorgeous book.
And I didn't even know there was a map. That
full-size poster map in the back. Very nice. Probably got that sticky stuff.
Yep. So, take a look at that. But again, it did this kind of the same thing as some of the other books did with the maps on the actual back pages. One thing I am liking, though, is you're already seeing books coming out in PDF form. There is a small bestiary in here. This core book is kind of like the Rules Cyclopedia.
Right.
This is all you need. And the critters are weird. I have to give that to him. These critters, he did a great job. These are funky. I mean, I mean, it's just funky.
This is a gorgeous book.
It really is.
It really reminds me, the cover anyway and whatnot, reminds me of the Dune RPG that was short-lived.
It is kind of Dune-ish. I don't know yet. It's hard for me to... Uh-huh. I mean, I don't think I would dislike it at all. Sure. I know if I'm in my fantasy mode, I'm not going to want to play it.
Sure.
Because when I want magic, I want magic. But if I want, like, an odd sci-fi...
Yeah.
Then this...
So I'm saying, looking at it, it sort of... It evokes a few different sort of things to me. One being, you know, like the Dark Crystal. Sort of the John Carter of Mars on Martians.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. And with
some bad 80s sci-fi fantasy films, you know, Hawk the Slayer. Yeah.
Well, and Monty Cook, for the most part, does good stuff. Every once in a while, he'll miss.
But... The pictures really kind of remind me of, there's an artist that does creature designs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. His book called Barlow.
Oh, yes, Barlow, yeah.
I think he did the creature design for Avatar. But
Avatar and...
He does some beautiful, beautiful work.
Yeah.
This kind of reminds me of that. At least.
And it's fully color. I think that's part of the price. It was like $40-$50. I know. It was
pricey. Yeah, 60 is the cover price.
Yeah. So, and I like the idea. I mean, again, I have mixed feelings about it in some ways, but not so much that I dislike it.
Sure.
Or I wouldn't have asked for it as a gift. I know I would have to be in the mood to play it or even run it. The nice thing is, since it's a billion years in the future, the technology can pretty much do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And it's even hinted at that there are alien races, and they have visited Earth. I mean, nowhere does it say that all those races are from...
Beautiful book. Beautiful book.
Yeah. It's one of those that you could even just have up on your shelf just because.
Yeah. It's like Tolus.
Yeah.
Just have it up on your shelf and be like, ooh, it's pretty.
Tolus is one of those that I actually have thought about trying to find a copy.
Oh, it's still available.
And purchasing it just because of how.
They put it back in the print on demand. I think you can actually get it. Yeah.
That would be nice because, but I would have to wait until I can.
Yeah, I mean, it's still $100 at least. Yeah,
but it is I do like Tolus. That is a very good concept. But yeah, this is a beautiful book. And I do, if you're looking for a sci-fi game, which I guess has fantasy elements, and it's perfectly fine. I guess for me, I really have a, I don't want to say a strict line, because I'll put technology and science fiction in my fantasy, but I don't...
Yeah, you've done that.
I do it quite a bit, but I guess the mixture the other way, which I actually like it the other way, but this is totally pretty much just technology.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's definitely not Star Wars. it really definitely is not. So it, you could tell that when he left WotC, he had that, and I'm not saying he left it just because this, he was already working on this, but there, you kind of get that feeling when you read the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But this was at least nagging him.
Yeah.
This idea was definitely just eating at him. So this would be one I would probably play in one first and then think about buying the book. But again, I do like this concept of one book is all you need.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else you can pick up, but really this is all you need. And I just, the map here is actually everything that's printed on these pages, but all of it, which is kind of nice. So it's his whole world, or at least the known world.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is sweet. And then whenever I can get that 13th age, we'll do a, we can talk about that. Mm-hmm. Because
what is 13th age?
It's basically to kind of counter, I mean, some people said it was like 4.5, but I, when I played it, I didn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
It had aspects of it, but there, it's just another kind of take on D&D. And some people went to it and said, this is D&D. This has the feel of D&D. And I was like, well, it's another game. But see, it had aspects that I really liked. Like the warrior, ranger, whoever he was, if he kept rolling a certain number on his dice, he kept shooting arrows. It had rules like that. But they were simple enough rules.
Mm-hmm.
And it would give cool aspects to your character. Or the minion rules were neat because the minions had a pool of hit points. So if your character didn't necessarily need a feat for like sweeping through,
mm-hmm.
but if your character did like 10 points of damage and those minions had 5 each, 2 of them would die. You know, stuff like that.
Sure.
And all characters had just basic damage. No matter what weapon they held,
mm-hmm.
they had a basic range and a basic melee.
Mm-hmm.
So, I pick up a staff, I have basic melee.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up a crossbow.
I can see where some people would be upset with that.
They'd be upset, or they would really like it. I mean,
yeah.
And it was fun. I can't say it was not fun, because there was aspects of it that really were neat.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to learn more about it. I mean, that's what Panky was running, and he mm-hmm. really liked it. It ran fast. It cut down ranges between, I think it was just like near or far. I mean, I haven't read through the books. I don't know 100%. But like distances were really simple.
Mm-hmm.
Every character always had something to do. Your wizard character never ran out of magic. You know, those simple things that really should always happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there should be no running out of magic for your mage. There should be, your ranger character should be able to do awesome things with a bow. Your fighter should be kick-ass.
Yes.
That's just how it is. So, I think it'll be neat to go through it and then either play it or just steal stuff from it. And dump it into whatever game I'm going to run. So,
mm-hmm.
but
well, the only gaming thing I got recently, and I don't think I've talked about it on the show, is last year for my birthday. I want to say this was a long time coming. It was the Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition Deluxe Heroes Handbook, the 10th anniversary.
It came, it's the 10th anniversary edition of Mutes and Masterminds. It's the third edition, with all the errata and everything. Beautiful hardcover, with a printing on the inside, cover flaps, I suppose, of the exterior of the, Game Master screen.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's got I think some pretty cool art.
Yeah.
On there. Well, with any Green Ronin product, you know, you have awesome, absolutely awesome artwork and awesome design. But it is a 352-page book. What they did is they have everything from the core book that that you're used to. They added in, I think, one of the best things since sliced bread. Also from the GM screen is the quick start character generator. Now, sometimes I'm lazy. Okay, most of the time I'm lazy. And I want a supervillain or another character. So I want this guy to be a superhero, mm-hmm. to have superpowers. But this has, hearkening back for me to the old school Marvel superheroes role-playing character creation where you could roll randomly for everything.
Sweet.
You can actually roll randomly for everything in this. And it's D20s, and it just has several different series of tables as you go. You roll a D20 to see what archetype that you are. So if you get a 14, you're a speedster. So you turn to the speedster section, and you just start going down the list. So abilities, roll 1D20, whether you're a veteran, a youth, or an old-timer. That gives you your base stats.
Cool.
After that, you roll a D20. For advantages, and are you a fighter, a nimble, a prodigy, a team player? Skills, it says roll d20 twice, so you get two sets, and you do not re-roll if you get the same one on here. So you can be athlete, a charmer, police, and this just determines skill points. Then you get into movement powers, whether you have just a straight runner, or you're a cosmic speedster, a teleporter. Movement powers, defensive powers, or offensive powers, defensive powers, and it has your defense allocation. After I've used this to generate a few NPCs,
mm-hmm.
and every time it adds up to 150 points.
That's cool.
So it's a straight power level 10 character every time, and then after that you can tweak if you want. If you need a power level 11 or power level,
mm-hmm.
take it back for power level 9. What I like about it is the way that they do it, because they have like the advantages of you're a fighter, you were trained in combat, so you get close attack to equipment, sword or other melee weapon, whatever. That can lead into generating a concept for the NPC. It's like, well, I need an NPC on this team or on this in this group through the characters to fight, and slowly you sort of start mm-hmm. to form an idea. Based on that, it's like, well, it's a veteran who is a fighter. Okay, well, he's an old soldier, or he's a retired police right. officer, or something like that. And you can have some fun with that, and then allocate some points accordingly. It's way handy. If you don't, obviously, you can actually get the PDF of this, of the Deluxe Heroes Handbook. You can get the PDF off of RPG Now with everything in it, or you can get the GM screen that has that generator in it. Well worth your time and effort.
Cool.
They added that to the middle of it. Then at the end of the book, because as the book as we know it pretty much ends after pretty much where it lists the animals, about 200, in this version, 270 pages in. Then what they have is a brief, like literally like 2-3 pages on Emerald City, which is their version of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Their West Coast town in the normal universe, Freedom City is New York, but when I did it, I made Freedom City Seattle, and now Emerald City will be something else. I think I'm going to make it San Francisco. To be honest. It has an adventure set in Emerald City called Ghost Town. Right after that. Which was written specifically for the for this edition. So, because more adventures are always fun. After that is a brief thing on Freedom City, and its sort of history and everything, a little sort of primer on it if you don't have the Freedom City book. And I think what it does is it also sort of updates it just a little bit from the last edition to this edition as far as timeline. After you get into that, it's The Time of the Apes, written by Christopher McLaughlin, a guy I've known for quite a while, a good guy. Another adventure set, this time set in Freedom City. And, of course, has monkeys in it because, you know, we love monkeys. I think one of the coolest things on this is the section they added, which are some essays and interviews about the history of Mutants and Masterminds. And it starts with the development of it, you know, the where it came from, where they talked to Chris Premis, who's the owner of Green Ronin, and Steve Kenson, the original, the creator. And they go to where they talk about the first edition of the game with Eric Mona and the Super Unicorn, how they used this design studio to basically come up with some with its own setting. Because before they had, a lot of people don't realize there was a different setting with Mutants and Masterminds when it came out. It was called the Metaphor setting. And the books, the original book and Crooks were all set in that. Freedom City was its own thing. It really wasn't. Freedom City was originally, as Steve Kenson has said in interviews, it was originally something he was developing for another game system that he brought to Chris Premis when they did Mutants and Masterminds, saying, I have this setting, and boom, he went off with it. It talks about the launch, where it came, you know, where how it was received by fans. What's really neat in here is there's a section about Halo. For a while they were negotiating for the Halo license, for a Halo RPG. Obviously that didn't happen. It's an interesting little read because it sort of gets them primed for how they were going to sort of roll that in, the Mutants and Masterminds use that system, that sort of thing, and how that primed them for using licensing and doing licensing later. Where their first license was actually the Nocturnals comic book series. They did a Nocturnals book, and then they did a second edition. When they get into that, then they get into the changing of, like, developers, the changing of people who worked on the series, you know, how Steve Kenson went from being a developer to just being just general other duties and then working on other games. And then, of course, the third edition with DC Adventures and working on basically their license for four DC Adventures books, which are all out now. And then the third edition, how it went, and, you know, sort of reminiscing on, oh, hey, we've been doing this for 10 years. And, the fun stuff is, you read in here, they obviously did a Kickstarter for it, and, they list all of the people who supported the Kickstarter and did all that. And then they get into the classic characters where they have updated versions, for the third edition of the classic characters, the classic fan favorites of the Atomic Brain, Baron Samedi, the Click, others that are in here, that's, Omega, stuff that wasn't updated or hasn't been updated yet. That's always fun. My only sort of qualm with it is if you get the DC Adventures, their books, they have two different heroes and villains books. So the second book, the end, has an expanded bystanders and animals section. They didn't decide to reprint those in here, so you still have the limited supporting characters from the core book, but in those books, there's more. They actually, because like the only animals they have listed stats wise in here are apes, dolphins, hawk, lion, shark, whale, or wolf. That leaves a lot.
Yeah.
That aren't there. But in the other one, they add in, you know, dogs and many, many others where you can have herd animals, things like that, where you know, cows, and tons of other things. And when you have someone who can summon forth farm animals and whatnot at will, it's kind of handy to have that stuff.
Exactly.
Nice. So that would be my only qualm with it. It's a beautiful book. It's I believe it's leather bound. It's leather bound in really nice green leather, and then it has a dust cover, a dust jacket on it. That's the standard cover for Mutants and Masterminds. Obviously, you can't buy the actual edition of it, this version of it, unless you get it in PDF format.
In which case, I'm fairly certain it's actually not too horribly expensive. Well worth it if you want a sort of definitive version of the Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition game. Let me see how much they have. They have it for... I did the Kickstarter on it, and it took several months for it to get to me. The nice part of the present that my friends all chipped in for and my family chipped in for was they also got Massive Defender actually got written up and is posted on the Green Ronin website along with a bunch of other characters, which is a lot of fun. Let's see. Lovely Mutants and Masterminds, we love it. Definitely check that out. That's the only game thing I've gotten in recent memory, to be perfectly honest. So, there you have it.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a nice book.
Yeah.
The DC ones are nice, too.
Yes, and I know they've also put out a Mutes and Masterminds. They collected the threat reports into a printed book called Threat Reports, I believe. They also collected together the power profiles they did into a book.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually something I think I might want to pick up at some point, is the power profiles collected book. Because those are actually kind of
useful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's nice to have those power profiles. And if you have a character or a villain or anything of the sort on... in D&D, or D&D, in Mutes and Masterminds, and you have a, and it's like, well, I want to make a speedster, but I don't want to, or I want to make a powerhouse, or someone who has gravity powers, or something like that, and you have sort of like, well, what can I do with those powers? They've actually done a full sort of array of different movement powers, offensive powers, all this other stuff that you can do with that. Sort of looking at it from different angles, like, well, you can use speedster stuff for flight, you could, fling bullets at hypersonic speed, you could, create deflection fields, sort of thing. And those are like a buck or $1.50 each.
Right. Are those on Hero Lab?
The power profiles?
Yeah.
No. That's, I do not believe they are. It would be nice if they were, but if you get the power profiles, you can build it easy. With it. I mean, it's just the standard effects, and it sort of lines out how you do it. It's like, so putting them into Hero Lab is not too difficult. Hero Lab, of course, being uber awesome, and we love it. Still waiting for their iPad edition of that to not just be Pathfinder.
Yeah, I hope they do a Android version at some point.
Yeah. They're working on it slowly but surely, as far as I understand. I get tidbits of updates from that now and again. But, cool stuff. But that's sort of what I've been doing. Tomorrow we actually get back to it, for the first time in many months. So that'll be fun. You guys actually have some character points to spend, and a week will have gone by. It'll be awesome. Since there was some complaining about how I don't give your characters time to, relax.
Yeah, you carpetbagger.
Yeah. Hey, I got the name blame for it now. See? Carpetbagger. Right there.
I should get a shirt.
I should. I would like a shirt. If I had a carpetbagger shirt, I'd wear it. Totally would wear it.
I think the last thing we should talk about is good old CanCon.
Yep.
Possibilities.
Yeah, they're CanCon is happening. Not a lot of things we can talk about quite now, but
we can talk about that. Happening.
It's happening, and it's going to be July 18th, 19th, and 20th this year. Location is being nailed down.
Location is secret.
Yes, it's a super secret location right now.
We will send out.
Hasn't been declassified.
Yeah.
But it is happening.
And at some point, we'll have how many pre's before the pre-release is it?
Pre-reg, we might just call it early bird.
Early bird. Version. Or early superhero, or early something.
Yeah. Secret origin pre-registration.
There we go.
Or something. I got nothing.
Whatever.
Our special zero issue of...
Yes.
The premium Ashcan Edition Zero, print zero, of with the embossed foil cover, pre-registration, for people who want to get in on super special different stuff other than just getting and buying, buying all the good stuff. So, we'll have that up on the CanCon site, hopefully by the 18th. That's the deadline I've set people, so we'll see. Hopefully that will get up there. So
be looking for that.
Yes. CanCon will be back in full swing.
You can always just send money to Ethan and I.
Yes.
We gladly take personal checks.
We do. Made out to cash, or made out to CanCon. I can actually just deposit it in the CanCon budget. And
you could send both. You could send CanCon money and just send money to us.
That's true. That's true.
That would be fine.
You know, people might, you know, there might be some complaining about it, but, you know, we'll be up front. Well, if you send us something that's made out to me or made out to Jeremy or made out to Cash, I might just buy a game that will find its way into the library eventually.
Yeah, after we play it.
You know.
Well, we play
it. I promise not to spend it on prostitutes.
Right. Or cocaine.
Yeah, blow, hookers and blow. Because, you know, we're totally into that here in Kansas.
You know what? Screw the blow.
Screw can't. I'm doing my own CanCon with blackjack and hookers. Wait. Okay, forget the blackjack. Now we're figuring out where it's going to be. So things are progressing on the CanCon front. There will be a CanCon 2014. It's just a super secret classified location to be announced. But the 18th, 19th, and 20th. Is the days you want to set aside to come and play some games here in the Kansas City area. And I think that's about it.
I think it is. I think that's a good place to stop. So be safe with the weather pretty much all over the country being a
polar super vortex.
They call it a vortex.
Yes, we had a vortex come through.
Polar winter vortex.
I want to go to all these newspapers. Really, guys? A vortex?
Well, at one point, they said someplace was colder than Antarctica. I'm like, in the United States. I'm like, how is that possible?
Apparently a vortex. But, you know, Donald Trump says global warming. This proves global warming doesn't exist or something. Really, whenever he opens his mouth, I just start hearing white noise.
Yeah.
I've sort of trained myself for that. Can't take my eyes off of his... Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, that remake of the Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, yeah.
And they point it and go... Yeah, I can pretty much hear that noise.
And then his hair...
His hair opens up and tentacles come out to take you. I'm sort of going far with this, but it's interesting.
Probably happened after his last bankruptcy.
Yeah, probably.
How does he remain rich?
Blood of innocence?
Yeah, probably.
Deal with the devil?
Possibly all those.
I don't know. White slavery.
Anyway, that's a good time to stop.
Yeah, we'll stop on that note. Thanks for listening. Do all the usual stuff. Hit the website with a mallet if it's not working. I try to fix it as best I can. My automatic defense is, I have a 4-month-old right now, so. Deal with it. Love you guys. Anyway, thanks for listening.
In a world where it's only available for download on GamersHavenPodcast.com. The Gamers Haven Podcast presents Mutants and Masterminds, 3rd Edition, Justice City United. Featuring the Gamers Haven regulars Eric, Jeremy, Robin, and Tracy. GM by Eva. In a world of superpowered intrigue, can 4 heroes trust one another while trying to make a difference? An alien threat, a complacent government, and a sinister villain are only some of the obstacles these 4 need to overcome in order to be some of the world's greatest heroes. Legends, or will they be forgotten? Only time can tell. Justice City United.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.